Good morning, Vancouver. 6 o'clock on a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Bruff. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Did we just lose to the you-know-what Canucks? Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience a Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. This show is also coming to you courtesy of Milwaukee Power Tools. The Milwaukee 100th Anniversary Event Tour is coming to Dick's Lumber in my neighborhood of Burnaby this Wednesday from 7:30 to 3:30. They've got a food truck and live demos and more. Don't miss it. Milwaukee Power Tours 100th anniversary at Dick's Lumber.
We are coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sorfy, what are you waiting for?
Kintech.
Okay, explain why there wasn't an intro.
We have a we have some technical difficulties behind the board. One of our systems has crashed, so we don't have any of our usual Halbro jingles, clever drops. We may have what happened, but you have to wait and see. You'll have to stay tuned in to the show. As for what's happening on the program today, guest list begins at 7:30. David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host. We are now in the final week of the NHL regular season. Still much to be decided in the Eastern and Western Conference playoff chases and matchups. All we know right now is that the Jets and the Avs are going to play each other in the first round. Everything else still up for grabs. We'll talk to David about all that at 6:30. 7 o'clock, second-time guest on the Halford and Bruff Show, Thomas Hickey, former NHL defenseman, now with MSG and NHL Networks. He's going to join us to talk about the East. The Islanders can clinch tonight, and there's a whole bunch of other games that we can get to over the weekend. Huge win for the Detroit Red Wings in their chase, and they still might fall short against Toronto on Saturday. So we'll talk to Thomas Hickey about the Eastern Conference playoff chase at 7. 8 o'clock, Kevin Woodley, NHL.com, In Goal Magazine is going to join us. Vancouver Canucks are now 1 point away from clinching the Pacific Division crown after a big win over Edmonton on Saturday night.
Well, what better time to get Kev on, too, because Thatcher Demko has still not played in his return for the Vancouver Canucks. So he's got 2 games left. Tuesday, tomorrow, against the Calgary Flames, and then it might be a meaningless contest Thursday in Winnipeg, and in general, you'd probably assume that Demko would just be left at home, but is that going to be enough to get him sharp for the playoffs?
So Kevin Woodley at 8 o'clock, Thomas Hickey at 7, David Amber at 6:30. That is what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's try it. Let's tell everybody what happened.
Did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
You missed that?
What happened?
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. Speaking of goaltending in the Canucks organization, Casey DeSmith, the first star on Saturday, 32 saves for the Vancouver Canucks in a 3-1 win over the Edmonton Oilers at Rogers Place in Edmonton. With that, the Canucks moved 5 points clear of the Edmonton Oilers with 2 games left. All the Canucks need, Jason, one single solitary point, and they will clinch the Pacific Division title.
They call that the magic number. The magic
one.
Number.
It's the magic
is
number.
One. Of course, it helped that the Oilers did not have Connor McDavid in the lineup, but the Canucks still had to weather an Edmonton storm to start the game, including an early penalty kill that could have sent the game in a different direction if the Oilers had been successful, but they failed. And instead, the Canucks managed to keep the game scoreless until the closing seconds of the first period when, well, you know who, he always does it. Sam Lafferty?
He's the guy.
Sam Lafferty took a smart pass from Nikita Zadorov, went in on a 3-on-2, backed up Darnell Nurse, backed him up more than Darnell Nurse should have backed up, really, and ripped one past Stuart Skinner. So not only did the Canucks survive the first period on the road against a team that was, in theory, looking for some semblance of revenge after the first 3 games against the Canucks earlier in the season, and the Canucks also had backup goalie Casey DeSmith between the pipes. So instead of getting, you know, like ripped apart in the first period, they actually came out on top by one goal. The lead became 2 goals, 11 minutes. Thank you for that. That was very helpful to the show. The lead became 2 goals, 11 minutes into the second when Pugh Suter redirected a pass from Tyler Myers past Skinner. Suter, who's been almost as snake-bitten as Ilya Mikheyev, is now back on a line with Miller and Besser, while the aforementioned Mikheyev is up with Pettersson and Hoglander. We can talk about all that later. But back to the game where the Oilers did get one back when Evander Kane scored late in the second. But the Canucks have been one of the best teams in the NHL when they head into the third period with the lead. It's almost their calling card. These guys can lock down a game. And they improved to 41-4 in that 41-1-4 in that situation as they held on for a 3-1 win. Dakota Joshua did score the insurance goal, his 17th of the season, with Edmonton's net empty. Assist to Elias Lindholm and Connor Garland. And I can't help but think that trio will be together when the Canucks open the playoffs. Possibly matched up against the opposition's top line as they were Saturday in Edmonton against the Draisaitl line. And you mentioned it, but congrats to Casey DeSmith, who stopped 32 of 33 shots and was named the first star.
So there's a lot that went into the game on Saturday that's extrapolated out now with regards to when the Canucks will clinch the division. Then you're starting to look at playoff matchups. When are the playoffs going to start? We've got some news on that, courtesy of 32 Thoughts. We'll talk about that in a little bit. What are the line combinations going to be? That picture is starting to come into focus, but you mentioned it right off the top. Biggest story right now for the Vancouver Canucks is, when is Thatcher Demko going to get back into the net? Everyone assumes it's going to be the next game against Calgary. Will he play the final 2 games of the season? And that includes the season finale against Winnipeg. And will he be ready for game one of the playoffs when the Canucks more than likely will take on the Nashville Predators in the opening round? And we'll talk to Kevin Woodley about it at 8 o'clock. But there's a weird sense of comfort that so many things have gone well over the last little bit. That was a good victory on Saturday night against the McDavid-less Edmonton Oilers. We were actually at the Vancouver Warriors game, but we were watching as well, keeping tabs on the game, and it just felt at the end of it like a nice little, for me anyway, a sigh of relief, an exhale, knowing that they weren't going to go down to the mattresses, final day of the regular season, waiting to see if they were going to be able to get this done.
This feels like a massive jinx from you, by the way.
No, it's going to happen now. I mean, look at the standings, right? I mean, it would take a lot, and I mean a lot for this.
Well, it would take the Canucks to lose all their games. It would take the Oilers to win all their games.
Right. So everything would have to conspire against the Canucks, and everything would have to go in the Oilers' favor. And to be perfectly honest now, if you didn't play McDavid in Friday or Saturday's games, are you going to bother playing him
for the rest of the regular
season? If he's got an injury significant enough for him to miss 3 games on the trot.
And a fairly big one on Saturday.
Why would you put him back in? So it'll be very interesting to see what Edmonton does over their final 3 games of the regular season here. But as for your Vancouver Canucks, congratulations now. They are 1 win away from hitting 50 in the regular season. They're a 107-point team. This is, and I've said this over the weeks past, and it's still kind of, it almost makes me want to pinch myself given where they were last year. This is one of the 3 or 4 best regular season teams in the 50-plus year franchise history of the Vancouver Canucks. And what they've done this year, combined with the hardware that they might get individually, this is going to end up going down as one of the most memorable seasons in franchise history.
What do we think about Rick Tocchet going back to having Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland? I won't say playing in the bottom six, but not with Pettersson or JT Miller.
Because, it's the right move.
Yeah, I think so too.
It's the right move.
Yeah, even though you've got Mikheyev up on the top line with Pettersson and Hoglander, and he has 1 goal in forever. And then you had to put Pugh Suter back with JT Miller and Brock Besser, and the only guy pushing for that was Thomas Drantz. But, you know, Suter did score.
Pugh Suter probably.
Well, Pugh Suter as well, yeah. Yeah, he was
also pushing for it.
He was like, Drantz, you should write about that again, or maybe say, I'm good. I watched the Canucks with JT Miller between Garland and Joshua, and they had a few wins, but they also had some disappointing games. And I just looked at the bottom six, and you didn't hate it, But look at it now. Look at it now. Lindholm between Joshua and Garland, you like that line. And then as much as Teddy Bluger might feel disappointed that he's not with Joshua and Garland anymore, he's with Lafferty and Pod Colson now on a fourth line. So as a fan, you're looking at that fourth line and going, that's a pretty good fourth line. You got Teddy Bluger, who's a veteran player who's played very well this season, as your 4C. Sam Lafferty, who was a nice pickup earlier in the season, add some speed, add some grit. And then Vasily Podkolzin. I mean, it could be him, it could be someone else, but Podkolzin, who's a good young player for the Canucks, I think he's done pretty well coming up from the AHL. He's a big body, he can be physical. I just think the lineup looks a lot more complete. The question is, can the top six get it done with those quote-unquote, you know, like lesser players playing up there, including McKeev and Suter?
I mean, the reason that I like it is that it harkens back to earlier in the year where they were running this out, obviously with Bluger in between the third line as opposed to Lindholm. And that's when the Canucks were playing their best hockey and had their most success and looked like the most complete version of themselves that we've seen all year. Because when we talked about the third line earlier, what it was the matchups tended to work in their favor because, you know, Besser Miller were getting who they were getting and PD was getting who he was getting in a matchup. And they were able to be thrown out there in a variety of different roles and situations to either turn momentum or keep it going. Well, and I think that's what he gets when they're deployed as they're being deployed right now.
I mean, you mentioned the matchups. When the Canucks are at home, I think you can free up matchups for the top six. Now, you don't free them up for the – it's not like the HBK line that where they play the other team and the other team's like, oh, we got to deal with the Crosby line and the Malkin line and whatever. We'll see if we can beat the HBK line with whoever. And that in case you guys don't remember, it was Hagelin, Bonino, and Kessel. With Lindholm, Joshua, and Garland, especially when the Canucks are playing at home, they can match that line up against the other team's top line and hope that it frees up a better matchup for, let's say, the Pettersson line. And that's probably what Rick Tocchet is going to do. He's going to say, okay, defensively, I'm going to match up with the Lindholm line and the JT Miller line and hope that the Pettersson line gets some favorable matchups and that hope that Petey's ready to play, hope that Hoglander can keep using his energy to drive that line and hope that McKeev can, I don't know, score once.
Yeah, I mean, look.
Know, convert some of these chances.
Is it ideal?
Find some hands.
Is it ideal that your $11.6 million a year center is playing between Nils Höglander and Ilya McKeev? No, it's not. But I think we've come to the realization now that, one, it's not a perfect roster build at forward. There are a couple deficiencies there that it's not the ideal scenario. And then two, sometimes trying to reinvent the wheel broke what was working just fine earlier in the year. Like when we talked about, and I think really now you see that it's Joshua and Garland's chemistry together. There was no sense in breaking it up, right? Yeah. And I understand, yeah, you played them with Miller and you moved them around. But look, JT Miller is on a 10-game point streak where he's got 13 points in the 10 games. Some of that was with guys like Joshua and Garland in his wingers. Some of them like last game. It was where we went back to Besser and to Suter.
And some of it was on the power play.
My point is, at a certain point, you have to let your big dogs try to eat or encourage them to carry and to go out and play with some bite and play with some snarl. Like, you've talked a lot this year about, instead of trying to prop Petey up with better wingers, how about he carries a line? And I do think there's some merit to that, especially in the postseason where everyone has to kind of, you know, cut their teeth and you either sink or swim. Like, that's the playoffs, right? That's where guys either prove it or they don't prove it. So,
I also think Tocchet was kind of like, hey, if Petey's not going to go, then we got to have two lines to do.
Well, that's the other part of it too, right?
So, let's put Besser back with Miller and Suter and then we'll put Lindholm with Garland and Joshua. So at least, you know, we can relatively trust those two lines.
That was the old robbing Peter to pay Paul. In this case, it's Petey. Yeah.
Rick Tocchet did a lot to try and get the Pettersson line going, and I think Pettersson has improved a little bit over those last few games. I still don't think he's at the level where he needs to be, or frankly, even close to it, especially given the contract, especially given his importance to the team, especially, you know, taking all that out of knowing what he's capable of. Likely playoff matchups in the West. Okay, one of them is locked in, and that's Jets, Avs.
First time they'll ever play each other in the postseason.
Yeah, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. I guess we don't know who is officially going to be the home team there, but, man, the Jets went into Colorado on the weekend, and Saturday, someone texted me, what's going on with the Jets in Colorado? I'm like, what do you mean? And then I look at the score, it's like 7-0 for the Jets in Colorado. So,
well, did you see what Colorado did last night?
Did they blow it?
They got out to a 3-0 lead in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Then Vegas stormed back, and it was Tomas Hertl with the game winner for the Vegas Golden Knights, who, by the way, are
in regulation or OT?
Overtime. So, okay. Colorado got a point, which means they're still jockeying for home ice, the 2-3 with them and the Winnipeg Jets. The only Western Conference playoff matchup, as you mentioned, that's locked in. It sure does look right now that it's going to be Canucks-Preds in the first round. Mm-hmm. However, Vegas is kind of quietly, although not even that quietly, because that was a big win for them last night with Hurdle getting the OT winner. They can kind of throw this thing into arrears because they can either jump up and it's going to be tough to catch Nashville, but they can jump up and catch LA for third spot
right.
in the Pacific, which would drop LA down into that for into that second wild card spot.
Which would be, I wouldn't mind that because then it would be Oilers Vegas in the first round. But it's very likely. Now, these things, like they have, you know, sports club stats, they have it at 70 or 80%, something like that. It's going to be the Canucks and the Preds, the Kings and the Oilers, the Jets and the Avs is 100%.
Yep.
And then Dallas would play Vegas.
Those are the most likely matchups.
The East is a little more wide open, although very likely that it'll be Leafs, Panthers, Boston, Tampa Bay, and Carolina, New York Islanders. New York Islanders seem to have done just enough to get that third place in the Metro. The final playoff spot saw the Detroit Red Wings pull into the driver's seat with, I don't even want to call it the driver's seat. It's like,
it's not really.
They're kind of in the front seat. They're riding in the front seat like a big boy.
Yeah.
With a huge OT win Saturday in Toronto, while Pittsburgh fell to Boston, and that was a huge loss for the Penguins. The Caps still have a decent shot to get in, and the Pens and Flyers are still alive too. And they'll all be hoping Montreal can spoil it for the Red Wings as Montreal and Detroit play a home and home to finish the season. Tonight, the big games in the East are Detroit hosts Washington, Pittsburgh hosts Nashville, and Washington hosts Boston.
Mm-hmm.
The Winnipeg Jets, I do want to have a quick discussion about them because I feel like on this show, we haven't really talked about the Jets all that much. We've been like, yeah, Rick Bonus, you know, good story there. And they get rid of Wheeler and the team seems to come together. And, of course, they've got Connor Hellebuck who's going to win the Vezina. And that's important. They've beaten Colorado in all three games this season,
yep,
including 7-0 on Saturday. If you look at their goal differential, it is one of the best in the NHL. So it's not like they're lucking their way into a bunch of wins. Do you think we've paid enough attention to the Winnipeg Jets this season? Are we disrespecting the Jets? Because in my mind, I'm kind of like, yeah, Colorado will take care of them. But, you know, I'm not so, maybe I shouldn't be so confident that Colorado will take care of them. Maybe Colorado's a little too top heavy still. And maybe the Jets are such a good defensive team, and they certainly seem to have the goaltending advantage over a team like Colorado.
Well, I mean, stylistically, you're not going to get a more diametrically opposed matchup in the opening round, right? Winnipeg Jets, the best defensive team in hockey with the best goaltending. There's two teams in the NHL right now that have allowed less than 200 goals this season, and the Winnipeg Jets are tops with 193. Florida's the other one, by the way, a very good, staunch defensive team in Florida with 196 against. And you've got them going up against a Colorado team that has filled the back of the net this year, but has also allowed a lot of goals. Now, sometimes when I see the regular season matchup get as heavily swayed, like, for example, Vancouver Canucks, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, they swept the Edmonton Oilers during the regular season this year.
Yeah. So that would probably happen in the playoffs, right?
Like, I would be hesitant if the two were to meet up to proclaim that the Canucks will continue their outright dominance and put another sweep on them in the playoffs. So I don't put a ton of credence into the regular season matchup. As a matter of fact, I think sometimes it works in favor of the team that got dominated because they've got that chip on their shoulder. However, it's hard not to look at it and say that Winnipeg might be the perfect foil for the Avalanche because they've got the really good goaltending, because they've got a really sound defensive structure. And the interesting thing with Winnipeg is, whereas Colorado is top-heavy with regards to its scoring, Winnipeg is a lot like the Los Angeles Kings in that they don't have one elite guy, but they have a bunch of guys that can fill it. Mm-hmm. I think they have four 20-goal scorers. They have, I think, 10 guys that are double digits in goals.
And yet their top point getter has 70 points. Yeah, that's Mark Scheifele.
It's spread out throughout the team. Like, they're going to go into series, again, probably not unlike the Los Angeles Kings, and say, you know, if we get to three, we have a good chance of beating you because we often don't allow more than two. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the Jets' MO.
Yeah, you do wonder if guys like Mark Scheifele or Kyle Connor or Nikolaj Ehlers would have more points. Now, I mean, Scheifele's been injured a bit, and so is Kyle Connor, but more points per game if they played a different style.
Yeah, I mean, they play it close to the vest.
Mm-hmm.
They don't take a ton of risks outside of their structure. And, right, I mean, but I go back to it, is that when you can roll, and the thing that they did when they got those players from Los Angeles and basically added three NHL caliber forwards to their team, and Vilardi's probably been the best of the three with the 21 goals that he's gotten. He only played half the year. They just allowed themselves to be a more balanced depth scoring team so that they could roll lines one through three and still throw offense at you, and allowed them to play the defensive structure, which again has made them the best defensive team in the NHL this year. So that series, I'm quite looking forward to it. I love when it's got the two really different styles going toe-to-toe, because you want one team that's trying to put their stamp in the way they want to play it, and then you've got the other team that's almost looking to counterpunch in a way.
Do you think, who of the wildcard teams, who is most likely to pull an upset? Because you've got some pretty good teams in there. You got Tampa Bay. You've got maybe Detroit, although Washington is possible as well. And so I guess are the Flyers and the Penguins. And then you've got the Nashville Predators and the Vegas Golden Knights,
yeah,
but possibly the LA Kings.
I would say if Vegas goes in as the second wild card, that is by far the team in the four wild cards most likely to pull an upset.
Wow,
in the first
I 100%
round.
Disagree with your by far, because I think Tampa Bay could easily beat the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
They'd be up against Boston. And they could easily beat Boston.
Mm-hmm. I would go with Vegas, one, because of the defending Stanley Cup champion thing. The other part of it, though, is Mark Stone. Is it?
Oh, has Tampa never won any cups? Or
not last year? If you missed,
there's a lot of repeat champs. Then
if you missed it, yeah, Tampa Bay was. If you missed it over the weekend, Mark Stone has been cleared to return to practice for the Vegas Golden Knights, which was met with pure, you know, no one was skeptical or critical of this. Everyone just thought this is exactly how it's supposed to go.
There's something off with that team.
Well, they got a big win on Sunday. Thomas Hertl got the game winner. I don't quite know if Stone is going to be the magic elixir, but I know that it's going to give him a boost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be, you got that.
What a freaking boost.
There it is.
And that works.
Yeah, and I'll be very
curious. What if his spleen is bothering him?
I got a feeling like his spleen's
He's on
okay.
the ice. Oh, my spleen.
I got a feeling his spleen's going to be okay. But
what if it's sticking out and he can't skate? Do spleens stick out?
By the way, to
dude, you got to get that looked at.
To agree with you to a certain level, though, if there was a 1B to my 1A, it would be Tampa Bay being able to get an upset in the first round.
You know what I could see is the Detroit Red Wings winning a few games early in the series and making things interesting, because they're going to have the energy and they're going to have the speed. But I also watch the Red Wings play sometimes, and I'm like, are you guys defending at all?
They are every game is 5-4, 6-5.
Yeah. They're fun to watch.
They are fun to
They've
watch.
Got a lot of energy.
So that game on Saturday, which unfortunately we didn't have the audio from, because when Dylan Larkin scored in overtime to beat the Leafs, they went ballistic. The Red Wings radio call went nuts. They were, because you got to realize that game, if they had lost in regulation to Toronto, they would have been eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So they rallied to force overtime. Dylan Larkin scores in overtime. They go nuts. And now they kind of live to fight another day. That entire race in the East is so tight, man, so tight. It's like a playoff race. And I'm going to be very curious to see, Detroit, to me right now, is the most interesting team to watch because they've got the longest playoff drought out of any of the teams that are challenging to get in, right? Yeah, I mean, it's been long time since they've been, and they're fighting tooth and nail. And as you mentioned, they play the most. It's exciting, and maybe not necessarily always in a good way because they bleed goals like crazy. But they are the most entertaining team to watch of those teams fighting right now. All due respect to Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, who had a tough loss against Boston on the weekend. Okay, we got a lot more to get into on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Before we go to break, I need to tell you about two things. One, Milwaukee Power Tools. Did I mention this earlier? Yeah, I did. Milwaukee's 100th anniversary event tour is coming to Dick's Lumber in Burnaby this Wednesday from 7:30 to 3:30. They have a food truck, live demos, and more. Don't miss it. Also, I'm here to tell you about JanPro, the leaders in commercial cleaning and janitorial. If your workplace demands a clean environment, contact JanPro for a free, no-obligation quote. Visit them online at janpro.ca. Coming up, David Amber, Hockey Night Canada, Sportsnet NHL host, is going to join us. We'll look ahead to a bunch of games tonight, look back on the weekend with the Canucks getting a big win in Edmonton. Lots to get to on the show, lots of hockey as we are in the final week of the NHL's regular season. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satyar Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Monday. Happy Monday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer. Today, we are in hour one of the program. David Amber, Hockey Night Canada, Sportsnet NHL host, is going to join us in just a moment here. The highlight of hour one. Hour one is brought to you by North Star Metal Recycling. Vancouver's premier metal recycler pays the highest prices on scrap metal. North Star Metal Recycling, they recycle, you get paid. Visit them at 1170 Powell Street in Vancouver. To the phone lines we go. He joins us every Monday here on the Halford and Brough Show. David Amber, Sportsnet's very own, here on Sportsnet 650. Morning, David. How are you?
Here we go, guys. Final week of the regular season. Let's do this.
Four Canadian teams on their way to the Stanley Cup playoffs, and that includes the Vancouver Canucks. Curious to get your thoughts on the Canucks' big 3-1 victory over Edmonton in Edmonton on a Saturday, a win that put the Canucks just 1 point away from clinching the Pacific Division title.
Listen, I think it's impressive. I think it's impressive top to finish. They've been really consistent. That's the number one thing you could say about the Canucks. It hasn't been these incredible swings one way or another. The lows haven't been too low. They certainly have had some amazing highs this year. It was a workmanlike performance. And again, they weren't relying on Miller and, I almost said Horvat. Oh my God, it's early in the morning for me. They certainly weren't relying on Bo Horvat. They weren't relying on Pettersson and Miller and those guys, and Besser. It was the lunch pail guys helping out and playing a very serviceable game. One of the most shrewd moves, again, we saw this on Saturday, was picking up Casey DeSmith right before the season began. People didn't think much of it at the time. I didn't think that much of it. But again, all sorts of credit to Jim Rutherford, Patrick Alvin, and their management group by sort of identifying some of the needs the team had, addressing them, and here's the final product. So it's going to be amazing, guys. I mean, they're almost pick-ems in most of these series. We're going to have eight series, which I think, five or six of them, if they went either way, you won't really blink an eye. And then a couple of them, I guess, we'd be much more surprised about. But the West is a very, very strong conference. I would say the top six in the West all have Stanley Cup aspirations, really. So, I know Vegas is in the wild card too right now, but I just mean I include them in the Stanley Cup aspirations. I'd say maybe Nashville and LA are the only teams maybe going into this without, maybe thinking we're going to go and win a Stanley Cup or have the potential to. I put Vancouver in that group just because of how consistent and how good they've been and how they have had this great balanced attack. So, it's impressive, guys. I know there was no Connor McDavid. In fact, it's funny. I was talking last night with some of the guys I work with on the panel and said, maybe the best candidacy for Connor McDavid's MVP resume is the fact how bad Edmonton is without him. You know, maybe that speaks volumes more than his 130 whatever points. It's just, man, without him, they look very pedestrian, which obviously makes sense when you take out the best player in the world.
What's the story with him anyway?
I don't know. They have three more games. The way it was put to us a lot was that was more precautionary, and it's not, uh-oh. But, you know, one game you say, okay, two games, okay, and then you kind of go, I wonder what's going on here. I guess you could argue the other side of the ledger. What would he be returning for? The Oilers are basically cemented in on the number two spot. They know they're starting at home. They don't know who they're starting against. He's no longer in contention for the Art Ross. You know, he's 11 points or 10 points, whatever it is, behind Kucherov. That's not, well, I mean, anything could happen, but chances are that's not going to happen. He's here to win a Stanley Cup. That's what he cares about. And if he's at 95%, why not wait to get to him to 100%, I guess, is what the precautionary measure would be. That's a great question. This is what we believe to be the case. And maybe it is more severe, but I don't know. We don't know. And that's the great mystery surrounding the Oilers. You'd like to think they're not going to start him, you know, night one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, having not played in 2 weeks. I'd like to think he's going to get into at least one of these games this week, but I guess time will tell.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about, did Edmonton have anything to play for, and the value of finishing first and the matchups, because I was also tasked with doing a lot of the NBA prep for today's show because their playoff field is set. And I went back and was reading over a bunch of stuff last night. Like, Cleveland Cavs fans were livid that they didn't go out and try and win their final game of the regular season and avoid Boston in that side of the bracket. So, like, it's almost the polarizing view of it where one fan base is super irate that they didn't go after it. And then you've got, and I don't know how Oilers fans are feeling, because I guess it's still technically up for grabs, but I did want to set this up to ask you, like, how much have you already started looking at, because I know I've done it, a Vancouver-Nashville first-round matchup, or as a professional broadcaster, are you not allowing yourself to go there just yet?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to do all my prep until I have to know what the matchup is.
Sure.
But I'm really, it's funny, I was at dinner last night with Justin Williams and Luke Gazdick, two of our panelists on Rogers Monday Night Hockey, and I said, I really hope Dallas and Vegas play. I was kind of pissed when Vegas came back from the 3-0 deficit. I really want to see those two juggernauts. One, as a hockey fan, I mean, Dallas versus Vegas, I mean, that's a conference final caliber matchup. To have that in the first round would be really exciting. And secondly, as you know, I'm Mr. Canada when it comes to, you know, trying to get a Stanley Cup back in this country. To me, those might be the two hardest opponents for anyone to have to deal with. As good as Colorado's been, they're not as deep as Vegas or as Dallas, in my opinion. So have one of those two go out, have the Canadian teams avoid them, and hopefully have to deal with them at a later date. So it's all very strategic, and that would mean Vancouver and Nashville, which I'm not sleeping on the Nashville Predators. I mean, they're a very good team. No team has been hotter than the Nashville Predators over the last, 10 weeks now, right? I mean, it's been unbelievable, the streak they put together. Having said that, I still look at them as a lesser opponent in many respects than Dallas or Vegas.
What happened when Winnipeg went into Colorado over the weekend? What, I didn't watch that game. Ooh. And then a bunch of people texted me. I was like, is Colorado playing any of its players today? They lose 7-0. Not only lose 7-0, they lost. That was in Denver as well.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it's so funny. It's such a game of runs. We always talk about basketball as a game of runs within the game. Well, within the season, it's a series of runs. And Winnipeg has been on both sides of the pendulum. They're on that horrible 6-game losing streak. They finally got some traction. You know, Rick Bowness was pulling his hair out, just trying to get these guys to play a more consistent brand of hockey and make fewer mistakes. And they've settled into that, you know, nicely. And Saturday was a culmination of how they're feeling it right now. They're healthy again as well. You know, Toffoli was out for a little bit. We all know how good he can be. Gabe Vilardi might be that X-factor guy for him, right? He's a guy, when he's healthy, he's like a 40-goal guy. Unfortunately, never plays 82 games, but he's back. He's healthy. He's contributing. They look great. Hellebuck was there doing his thing, you know, certainly going to be given some heart consideration, guys. And I think Winnipeg understood the significance of getting home ice advantage, even though they haven't been great on home ice in the playoffs in the last few years. They don't want to have to go into Colorado and have to beat Colorado at least once on home ice. And I know they just did that on Saturday, but, you know, look at the splits, look at Nathan McKinnon's splits at home and away, right? He had points in the first, whatever it was, 36 home games or something like that. You want that final matchup. You want that, you know, really intense crowd in Winnipeg to be on your side. It was important. I think Winnipeg went in there with a certain level of desperation to wrestle away home ice advantage, and they haven't fully got it yet, but they're closing in on it, right? They basically need a point or two to solidify it in their final two games. So really big, you know, last 2 weeks for the Winnipeg Jets, and that's going to be a fantastic series. I think that's going to be, you know, I don't see that going fewer than six games, and quite possibly will be going seven games. So something to be excited about there as well.
Hey, David, what's the focus with the Leafs right now? Is it Austin Matthews trying to get to 70 goals? Is it Ilya Samsonov having a couple of outings, back-to-back outings, where I think he's allowed combined 11 goals? Is it that the Leafs are either going to play Florida or Boston, probably Florida? Like, what are people talking about with the Leafs these days?
I'm going to pick item D, which is staying healthy. It was not just the loss on Saturday night. It wasn't just Samsonov having back-to-back subpar performances, but they had both Brian McCabe and McMahon leave the game with injuries. And that's going to probably factor into, you mentioned Austin Matthews was 70, and Sheldon Keefe post-game on Saturday said, you know, it was a bit of a distraction. Every time he touched the puck, the crowd was in great anticipation, which, you know, you think you kind of want your home crowd to be in great anticipation, but I think his players fed off of that, and it was just too much deferential, you know, trying to set up Austin Matthews as opposed to trying to play a proper hockey game. And at moments, I could see what he's saying. But what makes it interesting is you have Bobby McMahon, you have McCabe leave with injuries. Jake McCabe, obviously, leave with injuries. You know, you have to wonder, would it behoove them to play Austin Matthews, even though he's trying to grab 70? They got to go into Florida to play against the team that would surely have the types of guys who will be taking runs at Austin Matthews, and knowing that they have a first-round series starting on Saturday. And then they have to go in the next night to Tampa. What you might want to do is on Tuesday night not play him against Florida, and then Wednesday night you play him in Tampa, which could be a more run-and-gun style, and you won't be playing them in the first round, and give Matthews the opportunity to get 70, keep the legs fresh or whatever. So I can't wait to see how the Leafs manage this, but I know, you know, after seeing two of their players leave on Saturday injured, I'm sure they're giving them second thoughts on, you know, Nylander, Marner, Riley, you know, Tavares, et cetera. Like, what do you do with these guys? You're playing to win in the playoffs. This isn't about 70 goal milestones or anything else.
We're talking hockey with David Amber on the Hufford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. David, is the NHL really going to give Alex Morello another chance to own an NHL team?
You know what? That's a great question. I don't know. Do I think there'll be hockey someday, NHL hockey back in Arizona? You know, based on everything the league is saying, based on the fact that's a very desirable market, has a lot of money, it sort of fits the bill of what the NHL has been doing lately. Look at the marketplaces they're going into. They're going into big burgeoning centers where there's a lot of, you know, whether it's Vegas with its tourism, whether it's Seattle with its tech, you know, obviously Arizona with its tourism and other industries there. It has a lot of the finances to drive a situation, but they might be done with Alex Morello. And I believe there'll be language of him having the first right of refusal, but they're going to introduce all sorts of hurdles, you know, that he has to, you know, and it's just, and it's not
literal of hurdles. Maybe you have to jump over this 100-foot.
Yeah. It's just, it hasn't gone swimmingly at all. And I think the ownership group has to take a lot of the responsibility there. And, you know, you've heard, you know, there was a big investigation into not paying bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It just hasn't been smooth. And the NHL might have other suitors there. I mean, you have two different groups fighting for a team in Atlanta. There are people who want NHL franchises. They see the value in having an NHL franchise. And if you could have a more stable ownership group who takes it to that marketplace, it could work out well for both the NHL and for that new ownership group. And I'm not sure that's going to be Morello.
You know, I'm sure the other NHL owners are happy with franchise values these days, but there must be, I don't know, take the owners out of the equation. How does it strike you that Alex Morello is probably going to make hundreds of millions of dollars in profits on the sale of the Coyotes to the NHL, which is then going to flip them to Ryan Smith?
It's funny. Certainly, you know, I didn't go to business school, but I can't imagine this is how to run a business 101, but it might work out in the long run. I mean, the numbers we're hearing are Ryan Smith paying $1.2 billion, the NHL basically giving Morello $100 million of that, taking $200 to split up with the owners, I guess. And, you know, $1 billion, you know, he has a lot of debt to pay off from the sounds of it. But you're right, he'd be making off like a bandit. And I don't know. You know, maybe just the business model is so good right now that it's a can't lose proposition. You have to have the money up front to get a team. But once you get a team, I mean, look at Foley in Vegas. He got a steal of a deal seemingly at $500 million, right?
Yeah, but then he put money into the franchise and they won Stanley Cups, right? Like, he's done a pretty good job. It just seems like this guy went in there, and maybe it was desperation that allowed or that led to the NHL allowing Alex Morello to buy a team. Remember, he tried to buy an NBA team, and that didn't happen for him. And then they're so desperate to keep this market alive that they go to a guy with like Alex Morello, and then all sorts of stories about how he runs his business, how the morale is pretty low among people, how, you know, the culture is maybe even toxic and the Coyotes. And, you know, what really struck me was hearing Elliot Friedman talk about Alex Morello on the 32 Thoughts podcast, because Fridge is usually so measured, but like you could hear the, I don't know if Friedge felt that he was fooled by this guy, but it just feels like there's a lot of people in NHL circles, including the players, maybe other owners, maybe I don't know what the commissioner thinks of all this, but like it feels like there's a lot of people that are just really angry and basically saying like, Alex Morello, this guy lied to us.
You know what? It's another cautionary tale for the NHL, and this isn't the first time. We had Len Barry and all sorts of problems in Tampa. Andrew Barraway, who used to own the Coyotes, you know, he went into bankruptcy. The league had to buy the team from him. I mean, it's been a series. Jim Balsillie, they dodged a massive bullet. Have you guys seen the Blackberry
movie? Oh, yeah, that's great. Do you remember Boots Del Baggio? Predators, like there have been some guys that they've allowed to own and run hockey teams. In a lot of cases, it seems like they're like, okay, this might not be ideal, but we're committed to this idea. We're committed to this market. Let's give them a shot. And then it kind of blows up in their faces.
Yeah, honestly, that's happened. We just named a handful of times it's happened. And I think, you know, if anything, it's a cautionary tale and the due diligence that's going to go in. They've obviously feel very comfortable with Ryan Smith, who by all accounts is an incredibly successful business person and, you know, the kind of guy, young, progressive, smart, that you want leading one of your franchises. So, you know, sometimes people get mesmerized by the mighty dollar and people are, you know, pitching you something, even though if it's, you know, what did your grandmother used to say to you and to me, you know, if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. And it's felt that it feels that way. It feels like, I wouldn't say the word duped seems like a strong word, but they certainly, I think, were maybe sold a bill of goods with some of these ownership groups, you know, specifically now with Alex Morello, that we find out very quickly are too good to be true. So I do think hockey will end up back down in the desert because I think there's an appetite for it, but I definitely think it could be with a different owner.
Four Canadian teams on their way to the playoffs. Montreal, not one of them, but Montreal will have a pretty big say in who goes to the playoffs because they play their final two games of the season against the Detroit Red Wings, who for me are the most interesting team going into this final week of the playoffs. That game is on Sportsnet tonight, so David, with that, we'll let you go. Enjoy the games tonight and the rest of this week. Final week of the regular season should be pretty good. We'll do this again next Monday. We'll be talking playoffs.
I can't wait, guys. Let's see how this all plays out. Thanks again for having me, and enjoy the final games of the year.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it, bud. That's David Amber, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL host here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. So really, it is a weird schedule. Montreal goes to Detroit tonight and then hosts Detroit tomorrow night.
Right.
And that's it for Montreal. And Detroit, again, I'm not trying to push this particular narrative, but the team to me, especially from a Canucks perspective, because the games against Detroit this year have been muy caliente.
Yeah, spicy.
And they've got the longest drought, not from the Buffalo Sabres, but the longest drought in the NHL of teams that can actually snap it this year. And they play such a unique, and by unique, I mean sloppy, but unique brand of hockey where they're in it. They're in the chase. Like, look at this. These are their – they're supposed to be playing tight to the vest. You know, we're going to keep it – these are their scores over the last little bit. They lost 7-4 to Tampa Bay. They lost 4-2 to Toronto. They lost 5-2 to the Rangers. They beat, or sorry, those are the Montreal scores. I got them backwards. Detroit, last couple games, 6-5 loss to the Penguins in overtime, which the Penguins desperately needed. That was Sidney Crosby's 1,000th assist, and that was the Erik Karlsson game. 5-4 against the Leafs. They've had a 4-3 game, 4-2 game. So they play really high-scoring games, even down the stretch here.
They're actually quite entertaining games, too, because they've got a ton of speed. They've got a ton of skill. Just defensively, sometimes you're like, what are you guys doing? Anything? Yeah. Anything there?
Now, I also want to mention this because sometimes I like to throw out a little red meat to the listenership. You know how on occasion in Vancouver, we complain about an Eastern bias or like Toronto being the center of the universe and everyone's always focused on the Leafs and it's always about the Leafs and then there's all these other teams. Now, this is from the lead at NHL.com. And I feel bad because Dave McCarthy wrote it for NHL.com, and he's a good guy. He works for SiriusXM, a good broadcaster. He was just writing how he thought the story. But the lead from Saturday's game in Toronto, where the Detroit Red Wings staged a miraculous win to stave off playoff elimination. Here's the lead. Toronto. Auston Matthews scored his 69th goal of the season, but the Toronto Maple Leafs lost to the Detroit Red Wings 5-4 in overtime at Scotiabank Arena on Saturday. These are the small snippets of media sometimes that people point to when they say, is Toronto really the center of the universe? I mean, all due respect to Auston Matthews scoring his 69th goal of the year, which is a nice total.
Very nice.
Let's be real here. The chase for 70 is kind of cool. And I think it's great. I think if he hits the mark, it's newsworthy. But it's not newsworthy until he hits the mark.
It interests me on a level of 1 out of 10.
It's
just a number.
It'll be cool if he gets it. A lot of guys haven't done it. I understand that, you know, Toronto's doing backflips about him potentially joining this rare pantheon of NHLers that have scored.
If he doesn't do it, he is a much lesser player. But he's barely a goal scorer if he only gets 69 goals.
I mean, what are you at that point? A 69 goal scorer?
Yeah. Like,
which admittedly is nice.
Yeah, for me, and maybe this is just my selfless kind of, it's all about the team. Like, you know who I am. You know how I am.
Most selfless guy I know.
First right? thing it's I think of when team. I try to describe you.
Yeah. It's not about the name on the back.
Yeah.
It's about the logo on the front.
Yeah.
I also put my name on the front, just so everyone knows.
Yeah. Welcome to Team Prof.
Yeah. But, you know, for me, like, whether or not Detroit gets into the playoffs is so much more interesting than whether or not Auston Matthews hits the 70 goal mark.
I understand.
Like, it's almost like the I'm not going to go down that line because that's. But I think this would be interesting regardless. But you know, for me, it's like this is why I don't like watching games with people that are playing fantasy sports. They're like, did that guy get how many yards did that guy get on that run? I'm like, I don't care. Was it a first down or not?
I'm just going to say this: in a game where a team is facing playoff elimination, and they come back and have a dramatic win in overtime. That's the story.
Well, yeah, and they blew, like, they had a 4-1 lead, right? And they blew it.
Right. That's the story.
Yeah.
Not one guy got one goal closer to a mark that, quite frankly, means nothing to nobody outside of Toronto.
Do you know what, though? I bet that he was influenced, the writer of that article, was influenced by being in Toronto.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the talk in Toronto.
That is the absolute.
And Sheldon Keefe has been saying, like, every time Matthews is on the ice now, you know, people are like, what's it? Do the thing where you score, right?
Yeah. Now score that 70th. Don't stay on 69. Everyone's talking about the this, and I know you posed the question to David, and I thought he was going to just say it's all Matthews, because if you watch 5 minutes of content out of Toronto right now, it's Matthews. And I can't really tell if it's a good thing, because it's almost taken away from their incessant playoff failures and the fact that this...
It's a good distraction.
Yeah, it is a good distraction.
Yeah.
For the all we said about the Leafs this year was like, just fast track to the playoffs where you'll either more than likely fail once again, or maybe you'll be able to reverse the narrative. But now, the regular season, in a very weird twist of fate, has actually mattered, because they're chasing, and by they, I mean Matthews, is chasing this rather elusive 70 goal
Maybe
mark.
He doesn't want to get the 70th for the memes.
Okay, so lots more Canucks talk to come on the show. We've got an open segment at 7:30, so that's an hour two, the second part of hour two. So Be sure to text in any questions or comments about the Canucks into the Dunbar Lumber text line at 650-650. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you, in Ladner on Bridge Street, Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. Kevin Woodley is going to join us at 8 o'clock, so that's the top of the third hour, and we can talk about the Thatcher Demko plan with Kev. And we can also get into some of the other very interesting goaltending stories around the NHL, like, are they worried in Colorado? Or are they worried in Toronto? But mostly we'll focus on the Canucks and Thatcher Demko. Coming up next, it's going to be Thomas Hickey, the former NHL defenseman, is all over what's happening in the East. And the East is a little more wide open when it comes to playoff possibilities than the West. So we'll talk to Thomas Hickey about the New York Islanders, for example, who seem to have... they're pretty close to clinching a playoff spot.
They can clinch tonight.
They can clinch tonight. The New York Islanders, even though they've got like a minus 20 goal differential, and it seems like they've been through a lot this season, they might be able to book their playoff tickets or playoff spot tonight. So we'll talk to Thomas Hickey coming up next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.